In the summer of 1972, Alice Cooper's hit School's Out captured my mood. With the A-levels over, I was heading off to Scotland to work in a fruit canning factory. After 18 years on a small farm in rural Fermanagh, Scotland was as exotic to me then as Timbuktu. I bought a trendy duffel bag into which I packed my treasured new hot pants, my purple velvet smock, my white tights and my checked Oxford bags. It was a beautiful day when I met my school friend Margaret in Enniskillen to hitchhike to Belfast. And with my duffel bag on my back, I felt myself on the edge of a world of boundless possibilities. With lorry drivers as our knights in shining armour, we made good time. Our ferry was due to sail at midnight. Our plan was to spend the day checking out the clothes shops in the city centre. It was not to be. In Belfast, our lorry driver was forced to stop at the top of the Donegal Road. At a checkpoint, young soldiers shouted at us to keep our heads down as someone was shooting at them. Terrified, we crouched down and the driver swung into Sandy Row. But there, a tartan gang carrying clubs headed towards us. The driver, with an air of calm resignation, told us it was his lorry they wanted and we would be okay. The same soldiers came to his rescue, but they ordered us out so they could search our bags. They looked no older than us, and when they got a look at us with our flowery bags, off on our big adventure, they chatted and joked with us instead of doing a bag search. Our shopping plans were back on target, or so we thought, before we walked unsuspectingly into one of the most horrific days of the Troubles Belfast would ever experience. At least 19 IRA bombs exploded in the city centre in an 80-minute period. 9 people would die and 130 would be injured. In the letter I wrote to my mother from Scotland 2 days later, I describe my experience. Honestly, I write, it was really awful. Ambulances and fire brigades screeching, explosions going off and people running everywhere, some with blood streaming down their face. Someone would tell us to run as it was dangerous where we were. So off we would go. We would meet people rushing in the opposite direction and they would shout at us not to go that way. Then we would run another way and be turned back from there. We didn't know what to do. There were explosions all over the place and rubble everywhere. I did not say in my letter how I saw my own terror reflected in the eyes of all those running in fear for their lives and how I would have given anything then to be back in the home I had been so anxious to leave. Somehow we made our way to the docks, but we weren't allowed into the ferry terminus. Exhausted and out of options, we sat on the pavement. Soldiers suddenly surrounded us. I asked one if we were safe where we were. His not very reassuring reply was that we would be if the next bomb was less than 20 pounds. Where to go? Margaret found the crumpled phone number of a 17-year-old boy called Barney, whom she'd met in Bundoran. We found a phone box and rang him. Miraculously, he arrived and brought us in a black taxi to his home in Andersonstown. After his mammy fed us tea and homemade apple tart, we returned to the docks to see the twisted metal of a 50-pound bomb which had destroyed the Liverpool bar strewn over the same pavement where we had been sitting. I only made that contact with home by letter when we eventually got to the factory in Scotland, as my parents hadn't a telephone. I didn't know that until they got my letter they were frantic with worry. Having seen on television the shocking images of mutilated bodies being swept up and collected in black plastic bags. The impact of the bombs was so horrific that for several days it was believed that the death toll was much higher than 9. My parents had no way of knowing if I was among them. My mother kept my letter, and I have it now. There is something unusual about it. She always opened letters carefully with a paper knife, but this envelope is roughly torn open. With its jagged, uneven edges comes a whole new realization of their relief when the letter arrived. Today, as I do every year on the 21st of July, I remember the victims of that day, known as Bloody Friday, and the families for whom no letter arrived.